have, because we attached Mr. Bayern's evidence from top of stage one.
Oh, we didn't think that we can do it.
The last page of his evidence was missing, so.
Sorry, apologies. Talking to this.
You didn't say before you start. So I thought we'd better start. Just on that.
Yes, that was what was on the website from the hearing, so I presume that was just a just forgot to be taken off.
Yeah, it just forgot to be taken off. Yeah, I noticed that too, and I just assumed I forgot to take it off.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't. Yeah, likewise, I don't
see yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, less than one page left to start with. And to my right, for those of you who don't know, is Eric Barnes, who used to be the infrastructure and assets manager for Cadrona and now contracts back to them. So, as we touched on yesterday, there may be some operational and scarier specific points that he can clarify that are relevant to your decision making challenge. And you are familiar with Mr. Farrell, to my left, and Fiona Black from Rural Journeys, to my far right. So you heard paragraph one before, which is about the case law cited in respect of a case law that emphasises the least restrictive regime that gives effect to higher order documents being that should be preferred. And for the Rural Journeys group, in respect of transport, it's my submission that there's no effects-based reason to treat ferry service providers that have a tourism element to their service different to public transport services in accordance with the definition as notified, particularly as the benefits, which is the provision of a service of benefit to the public and the corresponding reduction of road use are of the same type. And both Mr. Farrell and Ms. Black will expand on the key points we're making in that regard.
Can I just clarify on that? There seem to be in your submissions and in the evidence some sort of issue about public versus private transport.
Yeah.
Is that really an issue? We've got a public transport system in Queenstown, don't we?
Yeah, well, this is all about the primary concern is about how the ferry service is defined.
And yes, I know, but that's a different matter. But the evidence was going on about what's a public transport service and what's a private transport service. Now, isn't the public transport service that we have in Queenstown, the bus service, a privately owned and operated public transport service?
Yes, I think we were talking about that this morning. It is.
The fact that it has public in the term does not mean that it's publicly owned, because there seems to be some indication in the evidence that there was a fear that it was somehow policies and provisions were biased against private operations.
Well, the way that the water ferry service, I'm not using the right term, is defined, it does preclude the service that Rural Journeys does provide and will provide in the future. So it is treated differently in terms of, because of the way that definition.
Yes, that relates to whether it's focused on tourism or not.
Mm.
And we had that discussion last week with Ms. Ward from on behalf of the Marketers Park Group.
Yes.
And we got to the position there where her suggestion, I think it was, or maybe our suggestion, but there was a general discussion that led to the point that what we're really talking about is a scheduled service that perhaps something cops off.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And that's what the definition should be focused at.
Yeah.
And that's what we'd like assistance with, rather than.
Yeah, absolutely, that's the nub of it. It's if there's a scheduled service, I think I noted really briefly in my legal submissions, we liked the definition that was put up by QPL in their legal submissions. So I'm not sure if that's where you landed in your discussion with Ms. Ward.
No, we
went beyond that. Okay.
Different.
Yeah. Right. So, at what the boils down to is, as notified, it makes the activity that a service provider like Real Journeys can provide a full discretionary activity, whereas if it was captured in the definition, it would be a restricted discretionary activity, which we say is more appropriate, and then there's the corresponding changes to the policies that support that. So that, you know, that's the outcome that we think is the more appropriate outcome, is that the definition is such that it's treated under that restricted discretionary framework.
So just looking at that, we talk about UNS law, aren't we, with that schedule of service?
Not just the UNS law, there's also Queenstown Water Taxis, which has a scheduled service. And could, yeah.
KJET are potentially putting in a service too.
What was that, sorry?
KJET are potentially looking at a service.
And KJET are, yes.
Yes. And so that would also mean that, for instance, the, I don't know which boat it is, that goes to Mount Nicholas Station, that would effectively, could effectively fall into the same category.
Presume so,
yeah.
Is it scheduled?
Thing
yes.
On a regular basis, yes. So that's really what is excluding, what has been sought to exclude potentially, are things like karaoke's with their tourist trip down the river, which is when there are no passengers, they get going, sort of thing.
And it's a there and back trip, not
yes.
To take you to a different location trip.
Yes. Yeah.
With respect to earthworks, there is no intention apparent in any of the ski area submissions that they're seeking to be subjected to a lower level of environmental protection. No operator has sought this, and the Cadrona Alpine Resort Limited wants to emphasise that it is certainly not seeking a lower environmental outcome in ski areas and elsewhere, as the status quo ensures appropriate environmental outcomes are maintained. And furthermore, there is no evidence of a problem with the current blanket exemption for ski area subzones. To change this to a partial exemption creates an unnecessarily confusing and unclear rule framework for ski area operators such as CAL. However, in the context of the other protections and controls through the regional plan water and consent requirements for other activities such as vegetation clearance and construction of buildings, lifts and other infrastructure, there is already a framework in place that is consistent with the high standards CAL needs to hold itself to in order to operate at the necessary level to run a quality alpine resort. And I was just picking up on one of your questions yesterday, Commissioner McLeod, about looking forwards in the new, you know, possibly new area of more visitor accommodation and other services for visitors to the resorts. I double-checked the rules in Chapter 21, and earthworks is a matter of control for any new buildings or alterations to buildings, as it is for passenger lift systems and so on.
Thank you.
Finally, in respect of signage, the changes sought are in order to enable interpretation, directional safety and temporary signage without unnecessary and inefficient consenting hurdles.
On that part, no.
Thank you, sir.
I just have one little question. Hopefully what we've covered just now.
Yeah.
I think it's raised by Mr. Farrell's evidence. And it's come up various times and I'm just unclear about it. The legal situation regarding restricted discretionary activities,
yeah.
If positive benefits are not listed as a matter of discretion,
yes.
What is the legal situation?
Well, so there's I should have looked up the name of the case, sorry. There's a High Court case, and it was on Speedgrass Flat Road here, and the outcome of which, and it's not a, with all due respect to whoever wrote it, it's not the clearest written decision, so, but the dominant interpretation of it, as well as when you read it alongside the Act, is that you can only, a decision maker can only consider the matters of discretion that are listed in the rule. Not sort of part two enabling benefits as well. So to and when we're sandwiched between what the Act says and what that High Court decision says, the safest position to take if you think you've got an activity that's appropriate to have its positive benefits considered relevant at the same time as you assess the other matters of discretion is to ensure that there's a point that simply lists.
Does that distinguish, though, from Justice Brenderson's decision in the North Shore case, where he said that you, when refusing consent for a restricted discretionary activity, you can only consider the matters of discretion, but if you're granting consent, you can consider the...
So is that the Woolley case? Is that Woolley?
Yes.
Yes, no, because this, the problem is there was a case subsequent to that.
Yes, but they're both court cases, aren't they?
They are, but one was moving on from the Woolley case and clouded things again. Sorry, I should have actually brought that, seeing as we had a wee discussion about it yesterday.
Was that the one to do with the mound?
No, it wasn't the mound, no. Oh. It was to do with the Catholic school on Speargrass Flat, right?
Oh, that one?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, I wouldn't put too much.
So what I'll do is...
I'll find that provision
so you can see...
Paul Kavanagh, who's now retired, was on one side, and I wouldn't put a huge weight on arguments that Mr. Kavanagh presented, my experience.
I'll get you the citation and the quote, and I'll submit it before...
Justice Brenderson, I'd much prefer to rely on.
Mm. So I'll find that for you so you can see why there's that concern. And if it's not a valid concern, you know, if it's not a legal bar to considering positive effects, then that concern goes away.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just on, like, for example, infrastructure, like regionally significant or district-wide infrastructure, for example, and where they can locate. I mean, the benefits of infrastructure are often something that is appropriate to take into account when considering locational or scale issues or whatever. And I mean, that's a classic example where if it was a restricted discretionary, you might have to specifically mention that.
Mm, that's right.
And yep. I mean, in Mr. Farrell's case, he's referring to activities in the ski area, sometimes earthworks or something. Yeah.
So it is merely to ensure that when, just as Justice Randerson said, when you're considering whether or not to, if you determine to decline a consent, it may only be on the matters listed, but when you're considering granting, those enabling factors are relevant. It's just it moved on from there with this other, I'm sure it was another High Court decision. So I'll give that to you so you can.
I don't feel confident that it's moved on if you can point to also some Environment Court decision
that have followed it. Yeah, it's a pretty skinny area of case law. This is the problem. That I will, because we look at it every now and then and scratch our heads.
Seems
really
to
invite
the entire plan.
Yep.
Yeah,
that does seem
so. The activities all the way through.
Yeah.
Many plans,
that's right,
they don't specifically mention benefits.
Yeah. So now I'll show you why
it's 7 or 8 years old.
Yes.
That's not a recent case.
Yeah, that's right. That's the one. So we're on the same page, but I'll provide it to you so you can see why there's a concern, and then you can write a very clear judgment about why it's not a worry.
I'm sure that's
about the
signs.
I'm sure we'll be able to distinguish it against what.
Well, yeah, and just make it clear how the plan is intended to be interpreted.
Yeah.
A good outcome. Yeah.
Well, that's all for
now. Questions for Space Government? Having got three volumes?
Lord of the Rings. No. There was one, but it's yeah. No, I'm fine.
So with Mr. Barnes. I could lead a little bit from him about the special circumstances relating to the operation of Alpine Resorts that relate to earthworks, how much they do, what they do, what the constraints are, or you could ask your questions. I'm sort of in, it's with your leave that I would lead anything from him.
I think the easiest way, I mean, we've all read Mr. Barnes's paid for. although I have read it all, but it was some time ago.
Yeah.
I think the easiest thing would be to wait, and then when we're asking Mr. Farrell questions of earthworks issues are raised, then we could ask Mr. Barnes.
Mr. Barnes can just chime in.
Rather than I don't want to repeat unnecessarily.
No. But I think once you get into that operational conversation, yeah, there are some good points to learn. Yeah. All right, very good. So I think I was actually going to call Ms. Black before Mr. Farrell.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Rem Journeys is effectively a transport operator carrying in excess of 950,000 passengers in the last year on vessels and coaches or a combination of both. Rem Journeys alone, excluding Go Orange, carries approximately 70,000 passengers per annum on coaches ex-Queenstown travelling to and from Milford Sound, Manapouri, Stewart Island and Cadrona Alpine Resort. The TSS Earns Law carried 269,000 passengers last year, up 10% on the previous 12 months. Consequently, Rem Journeys, along with Go Orange, which operates rafting, jet boats and water taxis in and around Queenstown, wishes to ensure privately operated transport services on road or water are appropriately provided for in the proposed district plan. In practice, the distinction between motorised and or non-motorised commercial boating activities and public ferry services is artificial. For instance, Queenstown Water Taxis vessel operate as a timetabled ferry service and also offer exclusive lake cruises. Consequently, under the proposed district plan regime, these vessels' commercial surface water activities could still be considered a discretionary activities, whereas if they were classified as public water ferry services, they would be a discretionary activity. Earthworks chapter. The Rem Journeys Group wishes to ensure the earthworks required for the operation of a modern ski field, including the establishment and maintenance of trails for summer recreational activities, are exempt from requiring resource consent. Of particular concern are the proposed setbacks from water bodies because some of the streams at Cadrona Alpine Resort are in close proximity to groomed trails. Consequently, maintaining a 10-metre setback will be problematic. I still contend Rule 25.3.4.5 should be amended to provide for exempt revegetation projects such as the Waterpeak Land Restoration Project for the associated earthworks rules to provide to ensure positive initiatives such as this can proceed without resource consent. Signage chapter. Tiana Development's property at Waterpeak has the Mount Nicholas Beach Bay Road running through the middle of it. This public road terminates at the marginal strip adjacent to the TSS Earnshaw Wharf in Beach Bay. It is in the immediate vicinity of the wharf and therefore the Mount Nicholas Beach Bay Road that interpretation and directional signage is required, as this is where the passengers require directions from in the third photo below. In this context, the 2 metre squared maximum area limit for freestanding signs in Rule 31.6.7 is overly restrictive given the minimal amount of information that can be conveyed in a sign of this size. Open space and recreation zone chapter. I still believe it would be prudent for the council to develop a policy to address how conflicting uses of the open space and recreation zone will be managed. Regarding policies 38.2.2.2 and 38.2.25 or 38.2.3.2, the Real Journeys Group is seeking that qualifiers be added to ensure that small and appropriate structures such as toilets, changing rooms, shelters are not effectively prohibited. With respect to objective 38.2.4, as stated in my evidence, I do not believe that other legislation adequately addresses our health and safety concerns around the impacts of land-based activities on adjacent waterways, especially because of the new unique handling characteristics of the TSS Ensor, which are not understood by laypersons. Therefore, the change as sought to objective 38.2.4 is appropriate to ensure that the protection of people's health and safety is at the forefront of decisions made with respect to the use of open space and recreation zones, particularly where they adjoin water bodies.
I had a good read through your evidence last night. It all seems quite different with the Delaney's background. There's been significance of your operations. There does seem to be quite a concern about the tone, if I can call it that, of objectives and policy. It seems your concern is either that they're not sort of supportive or enabling enough. Is that really what you're trying to say?
Yes, and also our experience of the consenting team, they often, at the moment, apply the rules and policies very literally. So, you know, when it talks about maintaining and enhancing, when we're thinking about, you know, that we might want to install, like, changing rooms and upgrade the toilet facilities in Deep Creek and the Shotover River, we're just concerned that the way these policies are written, because it's in an outstanding natural landscape, that we might have problems with that.
So I think you touched on that in your evidence, but you might be faced with a situation like you've just described now, and you're faced with a situation where the officers will come along and say, well, if you have a building there, like the very fact that it means it can't maintain the quality of the environment.
Yeah, and the open space values and, yeah.
Yeah, because we're building there, therefore contrary to the policy. That's quite helpful.
Yes. So
understanding what your issue is.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, yes, that's
just a couple of questions. Following on from what the chairperson asked previously, and both your evidence and Mr. Farrell's have talk quite a lot about this public-private transport matter, but when it comes down to it, the outstanding matter that you're pursuing a particular change for relates to the public water ferry service and how that's defined. Is that correct?
I suppose our concerns are that at the moment nobody will be able to run a successful business just doing public.
But this is on water, it's not
yes.
about land transport.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
So that was my question. Are you really just talking about the water ferry service as in terms of public versus private as opposed to land transport provisions in the plan?
I'm also talking about the initial submission was about land transport, but this emphasis on public transport, the way it was originally written, was ignoring the fact that, you know, as I said, we take 70,000 people out and around the district by coach each year, and that that is incredibly important for managing congestion on the roads. So that we wanted to make sure that the emphasis wasn't just on public scheduled buses around Queenstown, but also about providing for these shuttle buses that for Queenstown rafting and, you know, shot over jet that everybody runs, and services to the ski fields. So yeah, it's both things, and that because Queenstown is such a significant tourism destination, whatever we offer, whether it's a bus service or water taxi service, has to appeal to tourists to be effective for Queenstown.
Yes, I think other people have said that to us as well. So one of the other submitters, or maybe even more than one submitter, has suggested this. If the line that says primarily or principally for tourism was taken out of the definition, and instead of that, the bit about scheduled services was extended a bit to make sure it was a scheduled timetable, scheduled route, and that included stopping places for people to get on and off, but didn't say whether it was principally for, or even partially for tourism, would that satisfy?
Yeah, I think that would really assist. Because, you know, I think about the example of other, like Sydney Harbour, where you can catch a ferry to get from one side to the other, but they would, in the middle of the day, it's spun as a tourism activity, but you still get the same from one side to the other.
Opportunity to get on and off if you wish to.
And you can see the same thing developing in Queenstown, particularly with, you know, if the water transport services got as far as like Jack's Point, that you would do, you know, you might do a commentary or something or other on it to make sure that you appeal to visitors.
Just one quickly, the restoration project at Water Peak, I fully applaud that, love the work that was done, so I'm informed. If I actually came from Oregon and I decided to take the natives out and put in pine trees instead, do you think that would require reserves consent?
Came from?
If I had a different view of the world,
yes,
to the both of us, because I think that's a fantastic project, but if I had a different view, let's say the company changes hands, and I arrived from Oregon and I love pine trees, and I thought that restoration project would be putting in pine trees, do you think that would require resource consent? Does that make sense?
Well, I think if you know, a rule was written around endemic vegetation, because that's what, if you're doing like a restoration project, that's what you want to put back is endemic, not exotics.
Can I interrupt on that? That particular rule, because it's an exception to the earthworks rule.
Yeah.
And at the moment it says that there's an exception for the earthworks relating to planting riparian vegetation. And you're saying, as I understood you, that you're saying that shouldn't just be for riparian,
yes,
but for any all replanting.
Well,
the actual holes for the trees,
yeah,
in other words, not necessarily great big bulldozed tracks to get there, but
yeah,
the actual planting holes for trees. It shouldn't matter whether it was in the riparian area or up the hill beside it, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's what you're concerned
with. Yeah, I think we planted 1,200 trees in 12 months. Well, no idea how much that equates to in earthworks, but...
Well, it wouldn't be 1,000 cubic metres. A cubic metre is a lot of earth.
Yeah, I know.
It's
Especially by shovel.
Yeah.
Shovel, yes.
I mean, you'd probably put 30, 40 trees at a cubic metre, I would have thought.
But I just want, you know, to see that enabled, and particularly the company has plans to do some sort of, get some sort of property where we can offset the carbon from the Henslaw. So this is the other reason we want to see that enabled.
I have absolutely no problems with the project at all. It's a good project.
It may just be a matter of detail of word.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
All good, thank you. That was all today.
No, I didn't have any other questions then.
Thank you. So here's Mr. Farrell's summary.
Thank you, I'll jump right into it.
Cheers.
Transport chapter. Private tourism companies, including but not limited to Real Journeys, provide transport services. These services are part of the transport network, and it is appropriate for the district plan to be amended so that it recognises the benefits of and provides for. The role of private transport infrastructure and services alongside public transport services. Water transport services and infrastructure, and reducing traffic congestion issues in Queensland. In my opinion, the definition of public or ferry services and associated provisions should not exclude tourism passenger transport services, such as that provided by Real Journeys. The proposed policy and rule framework promotes one form of passenger service over the other without any resource management basis for doing so. I maintain policy 25.212A could still be interpreted as discouraging and avoiding earthworks in the residential landscapes. And I do not agree with Mr. White that introducing the term help, as per my evidence, will inappropriately water down the policy. Having reviewed Mr. White's rebuttal evidence, an alternative, this clause could be amended to include the wording from inappropriate subdivision use and development for the same reasons that Mr. White supports amending the sub-clause here. In terms of the new framework, Council's reasons for introducing earthworks rules to ski area subzones is to manage earthworks that have the potential for environmental effects on water bodies and roads. This, in my view, has not been justified. The proposed rules introduce new costs and consenting risks on Cadrona Alpine Resort Limited, CAR, including the ability for earthworks applications to be declined without consideration of the benefits. The operative district plan excludes all earthworks provisions in Chapter 22 from applying to ski area subzones. And as far as I'm aware, there is no problem with the operative regime and so far as ski area subzones are concerned. The rules duplicate responsibilities of Otago Regional Council to control effects of discharges, particularly sediment, into water bodies. Sediment runoff that is not mitigated is prohibited under the Regional Water Plan, Rule 12C03. And sediment discharges are only permitted if they do not result in a conspicuous change in colour or visual clarity or noticeable increase in vocal sedimentation, Rule 12C1.1. Also, other methods in the district plan, proposed district plan stage 1, provide a mechanism for controlling the effects of activities. Ms. Baker Galloway alluded before, for example, the rules 21.12.2 and 21.12.3 respectively control earthworks, associated buildings and lift systems. I'm just touching on some of the questions yesterday, Commissioner Dixon, in terms of direction highway documents. I do not agree with Mr. Wythe that method 4.1.4 of the proposed RPS places an obligation on QLDC to impose land use rules for management of earthworks and ski area subsidies. Method 4.1.4 only places an obligation on QLDC to include provisions to manage the discharge of matters addressed in policies 317, 318 and 541 of the proposed regional policy statement. These relate to soil values, soil erosion and objectionable discharges. Signage. I agree with Ms. Leith's feelings and recommended amendments, except for the reasons provided by Ms. Black in page 8 of my evidence, that interpretation signage should be provided for in the same way as information and directional signage. In summary, interpretation signage plays a similar role as directional and informative signage. I therefore support the relief sought by the Wilderness Group to amend the zone purpose. Policies 31215, 31217, Objective 31.2.4, and Policy 31.2.4.2. Open space and recreation. I remain of the opinion that it is appropriate to amend Objectives 38.2.1 and 38.2.3.2 and Policies 38.2.1.3, 38.2.1.4, 38.2.1.5, 38.2.2.5 as sought by the Wilderness Group. Objective 38.2.1 implies that only the Council reserves and recreation assets are required to meet open space and recreation needs of the district's residents and visitors. In respect of Policy 38.2.1.3, it is not always possible, practical, or particularly beneficial to always protect and enhance ecological values that are of no significance. Policy 38215 is a very stringent and that is appropriate to focus on the compatibility of new activities with existing activities. In respect of policies 38225, 38232 and policy 38232, is appropriate that term significantly is introduced into these policies because it is almost inevitable that any new proposal in a public space can be argued to degrade a visual community values or natural character of landforms or landforms. Finally, Objective 38.2.3 is currently written does not provide for all some commercial activities that could potentially be appropriate as that is just a joke.
Thank you.
Paragraph 4, we heard evidence from Mr. Dent about ski areas and drew attention to dock processes as well. You haven't mentioned those, any particular reason for that?
Primarily because my evidence is focused on the Cadrona Alpine Resort and there's no dock.
It's private
land ownership.
It's off freehold.
Okay, I'll thank you. Paragraph 6, signage. I know there's a lot of concern about issues of promotional signage. I might understand what the office is now recommending addresses those concerns with what you said.
Yes, I confess to when writing the evidence, I didn't appreciate that I can't see a sign from a public space that's on the sign.
Okay, that's fine. Oh, sorry, the other one was the matter that came up yesterday. And you obviously got back and had another look at that. So the proposed Otago Regional Plan places an obligation on QLDC to include provisions to manage the discharge of dust, silt and sediment. So if the council can find itself to those matters, it would be justified in having provisions in the plan.
Yes. With the exception that the specific method, I don't think Mr. Wythe has taken you to the full extent of that method because it's limited to the policies in which it refers to. And for example, it doesn't specifically does not refer to water bodies. So just when reading that method, yeah, it takes you to those policies, and I think it's good to have a good look at those policies.
Okay. Thank you.
So is it your view that soil erosion and objectionable discharges don't relate to water in any way?
Not in the context of those policies, as I read them.
They relate more to just general loss of soil or slumping hazards rather than that same material living up in the water body.
Yeah, well, compared to my own little list, but there's a breadth of methods and policies in the RPS around managing water quality and sedimentation. It's not specific in those that methods. Doesn't make the link to water bodies.
Yes, go ahead.
Can you just tell us a bit more about these two regional water plan rules that you refer to rather than me Googling them and trying to look them up? So the first one, the permitted activity rule, C11, relates to a discharge to a waterway, presumably, of discharge of sediment into a waterway. And a standard for it being permitted is that it doesn't result in a conspicuous change in colour or clarity or noticeable increase in local sedimentation. So you need to know. There would need to be a discharge that didn't meet those standards before you knew whether it was permitted or not. I mean, I suppose what I'm saying is, how practical was that to implement for a one-off catastrophic discharge as opposed to a regular discharge from a pipe that happens frequently, and you can go and measure it, and you know what it's going to be, what its characteristics are on an ongoing basis. Versus
an
earthworks problem.
I think I understand where you're coming from. Stepping back a bit, my having been involved in this plan change as a submitter a few years ago. I had understood that the fundamental approach of the regional council was not to interfere with land use, because it's setting the limits at its ring fencing, and it's saying you can do what you need to do something. The regional council was going to leave it to the landowner to manage what, how you manage or how you mitigate land use activities. And the moment if you create a discharge that's not compliant, then they'll come down on it. That's fundamentally the approach that this regional council is taking.
Yeah. Which, and coming from another region, I mean, that's a very unusual way of approaching things, which this regional council has chosen. Now, I suppose what I'm thinking is that doesn't mean to say that the districts agree that that's the best way to manage land use.
No, and that's where it's my evidence to you that let's look at separating out ski area subzones. What is the appropriateness of doing that? Because the evidence before you, so that I've read, is I can't find a problem with discharges or land use earthworks activities affecting water bodies or affecting neighbours or having any nuisance effects on roads from dust from ski area subzones.
But you're not saying that there may not be other adverse effects from earthworks
and to be very clear, my evidence is not applying across the board around earthworks, and certainly I acknowledge that there is evidence in front of you in the technical law, the report and evidence from Mr. Sumch, as I identify areas that need improvement.
So even if the scale of earthworks that are undertaken on ski fields may be quite comparable to the scale of earthworks undertaken on subdivision, for example, you're saying there's no evidence, I mean, sure evidence, that there's no evidence of any concerns in those like ski areas, subzone locations.
Correct, and I really invite you to test Mr. Barnes or some of the quantities and activities that have happened, like, for example, Cadrona in the last 10 years. There haven't been complaints. There haven't been obvious issues raised. And just to, you know, look, we're talking a very large, comparatively large geographic area that fundamentally makes the potential effects internalised.
One part of your evidence, you give us some alternatives or suggestions for the setback distance from water bodies and the quantity of earthworks that might be allowed within that setback. How have you come by your numbers? I mean, what evidence, have you got examples from best practice? What justification have you got for those alternative numbers?
The alternatives that I raise come from my recent experience, primarily, I believe I stated that in my helping draft and lead for a period the neighbouring regional water and land plan, the rules and setback rules in there, the southern regional water and land plan. And I looked, as part of that, spent a lot of time looking specifically at managing the effects of earthworks, in particular sedimentation, on waterways. And it comes from that, in my practical experience, that 10 metres, for example, is actually a large area. And if resource consent is required for everything within those limits now, within 10 metres, that's actually potentially capturing quite a bit of activity that is not going to have any adverse effect on the water body. And I mentioned as an alternative the idea of slopes, and that is merely a comment in passing.
So it's quite difficult to write as a rule and to have a whole series of different thresholds for different slopes.
Yes,
having more knowledge about what might be appropriate.
I mean, I did see slopes somewhere in the proposed framework, but yes, so it's certainly not as simple as a setback.
And my final question is, you've raised this concern about the wording in 25311 and 312 about do not prevail. And that hasn't been sorted out between you and Mr. Wyeth, by the look of it. I think he said that he agrees that both chapters need to, both of the two sets of chapters need to, you need to comply with both. I mean, do you have a better wording that you're suggesting?
Well, I support the recommendation to roll over the status quo, which is not to have earthworks provisions applying to ski area subzones, and therefore you don't need to worry about this because the vegetation clearance provisions remain.
The ski area subzone people wouldn't need to worry about it, but other people might.
Oh, right.
your submission doesn't just say in the ski area subzones they shall not prevail, it says everywhere.
I haven't thought.
You haven't turned your mind to it?
No.
Opting out clauses better for this key area sometimes.
I don't think it's a big, it's a particularly problematic issue. I was merely raising it as a draft observation.
All right. That's all.
Nothing is for me, but just the, in your brief, just in 7D, you point out policy 3232 twice. Did you intend to have a third policy in there?
No. I'll just double check.
It was just two policies, or is there a third policy with a different number?
It should be policies 38.2.5, 38.2.3, and policy 38.2.2. The submission is correct, so it's just my evidence that's referring to the term significant in the Real Genius submission.
There was the, he used the word terraforming the landscape. Is that a recognized term?
Yes, it would be. It's more about just contouring the landscape more, I guess, just maybe more colloquial within the ski industry.
Yeah. So it's like jump park. And
yeah, jumps, train park, half pipes, that kind of stuff.
And when you are suggesting that the earthworks in Skevia subzone should be removed or exempted, and there's no other upper limit in that you envisage. So I believe there's a term, it was like 100,000 cubic meters, which was used as a descriptor. That seems to me that's quite a substantial amount of earthworks. That was all done with no existing district plan and with no resource consent.
Correct.
And you're suggesting no upper limit in terms of viewing?
As per the status quo.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
No, I don't have any additional questions for Mr. Adams. Do you have any questions for Mr. Adams? I did, though, take the opportunity to look up that High Court case you were referring to.
You're here to me.
And it was Justice French. And I take it back about Mr. Cavanaugh, who wasn't his submission.
Right.
Mr. Gardner Hopkins, actually, must have been followed.
Yeah.
And what Justice French said was that Part 2 cannot extend the range of grounds for declining a consent beyond those specified on the plan. It cannot bring additional matters into play except when it comes to granting consent. That was her interpretation of the Woolley decision. And then, so she then went on later in paragraph 100 to say, that was in paragraph 98.
Mm-hmm.
paragraph, and it follows that in this case the Environment Court was obliged to have regard to any Part 2 matters which related to the matters over which it consent was council had reserved its discretion. So its view that Part 2 was relevant for the sole purpose of identifying benefit was erroneous, but that was the Environment Court decision was erroneous in saying that its only purpose of Part 2 was to look for benefits. I don't think that's the same thing as saying you can't consider benefits.
No, but that's what I mean. There's an ambiguity in that.
I don't think there's an ambiguous when it says you can't extend the range of grounds for declining consent. Well, you're hardly going to use the benefits as a grounds for declining consent, are you?
Yeah. No, but it's, yeah,
that's
right. Yeah.
Practically, if you're considering the benefits, you're considering granting, because they will be an additional matter in the mix.
Yeah.
If you got to the stage of looking at the effects are so bad that you can't grant consent, then even if you have benefits in the mix, it's not going to get you anywhere. The purpose of the Act is not balancing benefits against adverse effects, is it?
Not anymore, no.
No.
I mean, if it was.
If it was, yes. I'm not sure it was in 1991 either.
I will clarify, because I am aware that other, I'm not even talking about this district, but other councils definitely apply restricted discretionary approach in the way that we are trying to mitigate against.
Yes.
So I'll set out where I see the risk, and if you why it isn't a risk, then I think that resolves a situation for this district.
And as I said, I think I said yesterday, by the end of Thursday.
Yes, perfect.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Just one last point, and not to labour it, or be a pedant. But when I mentioned the three policies at the end of your summary, and you said my evidence is correct.
You said the submission.
The submission is correct, pardon me. If you go to submission, it repeats the two same policies again.
Oh, the legal submissions?
No, the original submission. Yeah, so I just checked the original submission, and it's got the same, it says policies 3225, 3232 and 3232, so it repeats the policy again. So I'm just wondering if there are three policies on there. That's all. Just a bit of clarify
that. While we're looking at it, I forgot, and apologies, is a correction to my evidence in chief. It's minor, but it's probably particularly relevant. Page 7, I'm referring in paragraph C, I'm referring to rules in the regional water plan, and I've actually given you the wrong reference. It's, instead of 13.5.1, it's 13.31, and instead of 14.5.1, it's 14.41.
Just one minute past this again. 13.5.1 becomes
13.31
and
14.51
becomes
14.41. You find those ones I referred to don't exist. gist of 38.2.3. Policy 38.2.3.2. Policy 38.2.3.3. Policy 38.2.2.5.
Commissioner, are you looking at the table with the detailed wording, or just a list?
No, I was looking at the list. I was also looking at the original submission, which I felt that that was referring to. And you said the original submission is correct?
So the relief table and the original submission has all the provisions, changes, in respect changes and sort. Which?
That's the A volume of all the rooms.
Oh, yes. I was looking at your written submission, which just repeats that again. But so it's in Lord of the Rings.
It's Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
I'll check Lord of the Rings.
So, Sarah, it's.
Oh,
I have a couple of times on it.
Well, no, but I'll start on page 95 and there's really open space chat to get started. So I'll be in there somewhere.
Okay, I'll have great fun looking for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be in until 10 a.m.